Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassami. So, this is our last evening together. Until our next evening together. May we have many evenings together. By practicing together, we've created community, common toil, common work, common aspiration, common toilet cleaning, communal living, community living. This is quite rare, I think, in the world, that kind of, I don't know, this is the only world I know. I've lived community life for most of my adult life, so I'm very, very fortunate that way. And you notice how well the bhikkhus and samanera and anagarika take care of me. And that's part of our training as bhikkhus, is to look out for the seniors. Seniors look out for the juniors. And we have a lot of etiquette around that, and a lot of the encouragement is to anticipate the needs of the teacher. And I found that training very beautiful when I was taking care of my mother. That sensitivity and just being tuned in to someone's needs before they even say something was a very beautiful part of being with my mother, because I could help her psychologically and sort of spiritually, but also just very practically do lots of things. And I could see that training as a bhikkhu to take care of my teachers and to take responsibility in the monastery was it really paid off. Not that one doesn't mean you can't train in other ways, but that's part of our life. And men's energies can be very competitive, domineering. Men can be, I'm sure women are never that way, but I just know men's community, so then the softness of a man's heart, quite often, I guess in lay life, it comes through warm, loving relationships, care of children, and that softening of the heart is very important for all of us. But just speaking of men, it's that ability to relate in a non-competitive way, in an empathetic way, and that's what the Buddha's Vinaya and the whole way of communal sharing and communal relationship, that's what part of our training is about. It's not just about keeping rules, but it's rather about developing the heart and being honorable. So we live by an honor system. Our rules are an honor system. Like if I go back to my kuti at the end of the retreat and down a bottle of whiskey, they'll know the next morning, I'm sure. But it's not like it's a police state or anyone's watching, because it would only work. This only works on a volunteer basis. The same with your participation in the retreat. I'm not a policeman. I don't go around checking, going around. If you're nodding, I bash you on the head or something like that, or check out whatever. So it's a mature, mature relationship we are involved in, and all of us have this deep aspiration, and we're lucky to be able to pursue that in this communal way, in this way of Sangha Kalyanamitta. And Kalyanamitta is a lovely word of spiritual companionship. And I'm sure when you return to your life, wherever that would be, quite often that Kalyanamitta is not so strong, hard to find sometimes in work. So one can feel sort of a bit lonely going back into a sterile work environment, or and one can then maybe resent that, and basically one can attach to this retreat. You can very much attach to the feelings here, unless of course it's a complete bummer, then you're happy as heck, which is okay too. But let's say there was some profit in it, and there was some wholesomeness in it, and you know, that's spiritually edifying and so on. But it's also pleasant. It's pleasant to have people around who are of like mind, who are supportive, who are encouraging in the practice. And that's lovely, but it's not reliable, because it's not sure. Not sure. So it would be terrible to actually leave the retreat and then suffer because of the happiness you have here. So you have to give everything up. Just let it all go and then take the next moment as it comes. And so the idea you find in the, you know, the Zen training, where they have those Zen pictures. The last picture is the enlightened monk goes out into the village with a big bag of goodies and distributes them to all the villagers. So that attitude of going into life with a heart of sharing, a heart of giving, rather than the acquisitive, I want my silence, I want my space, that's going to be much more, I think, user-friendly for you. Having said that, the impact of competition or aggression or just the consumerism that you might face, I don't know, you know what lifestyles you lead, that's a serious consideration. So as simple as one can make one's life is very profitable, very, very helpful. And so there's all the issues of media and how much media we absorb, internet and cell phones and all that business. So some sense of restraint around that is very, very helpful. And that's one of the trainings that we do as monastics, is our monastic training is based upon sense restraint, contentment with little, communal agreements, sharing of resources, speech and action which is in concord, speech and action which comes from a good place rather than a cruel place, and so on. And sense restraint, or Indriya Sanghara, is a fundamental attitude to the spiritual life, because the sense realm is so compelling, and the sense realm is ultimately deluding, because the sense realm cannot really offer you the peace that non-attachment offers. So sense restraint is that capacity to be in the world somehow, but not of the world. You're not the mind's always, mind needs some space, doesn't it? It needs some space to relax or to notice the subtleties of silence. Whereas if the mind's always engaged with the sense experience, then it's just distracted all the time. And the Buddha's take on that is not that it's bad or evil. You don't have to feel guilty about that kind of stuff. It's just not profitable. And I think we all appreciate that. We all have a sense of the beauty of a silent situation, the beauty of a non-distracting situation. So I would encourage you, as you go back into your ordinary lives, to kind of check out where your distractions come, because on a retreat you have a contrast. You have the contrast of this situation, this environment, and also your mind has a bit of stability from the meditation, and then you go back to your homes and work situations, and then you see what things really throw you off, get you confused, distract you, and you can get a lot of insight that way. If you just hold on to any kind of tranquility or peace, and then when the inputs start coming at you, you start to resent them, you get no insight. You get no real understanding of how your life is and how it's affected by your social environment. So if you just kind of give up holding on to anything rather than, oh God, I got to go to work and that person, oh, they're going to go at me again and so on and so forth. You know, rather than that, you say, ah, okay, I'm going to give everything up. Give everything up and just take the next moment as it comes. And if it's anxiety, fine, I work with that. And then when I go into those situations, I have some possibility of seeing my reactive patterns or what I can change in my life to be more simple, more renunciant, more around sense restraint. Contentment with little is one of the, this morning, and those who were, you were here for morning meditation, we chanted the four requisites, which is a monastic chant, but it's just a simple that, you know, have enough food for the body, shelter, clothing, and medicine are the basics of life. So you need the basics of life, but to develop a sense of contentment rather than, what would the word be, refinement of tastes. Refinement of tastes is all very well and good, but it leads to attachment, doesn't it? So if I become a coffee aficionado or... I went to Seattle with Ajahn Sumedho, and we did a lot of Starbucks and Frappuccinos. I got quite, this is nice. But not, it's not quite the vision the Buddha had for monastics. Or like sometimes I travel economy, but sometimes someone shouts me a business class. This is nice. And it's interesting just to watch my mind. You know, I get in the business class, really, like I have to, let's say I have to fly to Hong Kong, it's Z plus 20 hours, right? It's just this long, long. And I'm in the business class, and all of a sudden I start to feel superior. It's like those people in the cattle car back there. I could just see it arising, this kind of... And then what arises is, I deserve this. You know, I'm a senior monk. It's a kind of conceit, isn't it? But I could see how easily, you know, one could take that to be the spiritual position that's really important in my life. So I flew to San Francisco last month and waited 8 hours in Chicago airport. That was economy. So it was a good lesson. So to have a minimum standard. And if luxury comes, fine, go for it. You know, if someone shouts you a business class ticket, yeah, enjoy it. Why not? Right? But just the kind of the capacity to endure hardship and the capacity to endure pain. And these are very powerful reserves of strength in us. Certainly, when I went to Thailand, the villagers there, they were so strong. The farming people, they had very little comforts, very little luxury. When up in the northeast, diet was minimal. They worked very hard. The monks worked hard. Lay people worked hard. And they had this incredible endurance. They could just be really hot. Or, you know, ground was always like concrete floors. Just incredible strength of endurance. And not complaining. And that was their lifestyle. Their lifestyle had encouraged that. We live much more comfortable lifestyles. I mean, look at this building here. So that those kind of strengths of character are very, very helpful to continue to develop as much as possible. Of course, when we age, we need more comfort. Sometimes I think I've been in a wheelchair. So the spiritual life is not just like just trying to get the peace of mind, you know, is this engagement with life, this constant reflection on the teaching, as I was saying earlier, like a conversation with life, your mind, and the Dharma. And then this development of character, paramitas, development first of all, a strong moral sense, a strong sense of generosity, the capacity to determine, to make determinations, to be determined, to create a good sitting practice, patience with the endless unpleasantness of life in your own mind. Honesty, to be really honest about one's own suffering, what's coming up, not to think that like anger is justified or that kind of the defilements of mine are someone else's fault, that kind of thing. Metta, goodwill, like I was speaking this afternoon, and just reflecting on that, to criticize some goodwill is difficult. To criticize some ill will is a piece of cake, isn't it? You know, if I'm annoyed, I'm really good at criticism, myself or others. But to actually pause before I dump something on someone, try to get to the heart, see if it's appropriate, see if I have goodwill, is this appropriate, is this time and place, and then come from that, that's much more challenging. That takes character. It takes character. And we have, like, we have quite a strong, you know, some strong suttas around things like admonishment, so that if, because in our monastic system, we senior monks are required to train junior monks, to tell them what the lifestyle is about and what the deportment is about and how to fold their robes, wear their robes, wash their bowls, how to take care of their kutis, all manner of very mundane things. And then, so admonishment is a part of the training system that we have, but to to admonish from aversion would be wrong. It would be an offense. So if we are contemplating admonishing someone, we have to check in our own hearts. Am I pure in this? Is my heart filled with goodwill? Do I know the rules? In other words, admonishment always has to come based on some common agreement, some kind of rules or etiquette that we have. Do I understand those? Is this the right time and place? So it's quite a considered situation, rather than just blurting something out. And we all blurt stuff out, I do, and then inevitably it doesn't feel good in my own mind. Never works very, very well, except maybe people are afraid of me, and it doesn't really train very well. But when I can see something in the community and wait and get past my annoyance, well, they understand, get past that nonsense and wait, and then say, well, no, this is not appropriate, and I say something from a good place, it has a really good result. Community hears it, yeah, you're right. And I don't have any leftovers in my mind of guilt or alienation or all those kinds of things. Am I still reaching in the back with the volume? Yeah? Okay. So, developing a lifestyle of contemplative considerations, always. What's my inner world doing? How am I reacting, responding to the world? And this makes everything meaningful, doesn't it? All human interactions are meaningful. They're not just a hassle or trivial. Everything has importance to it. And that's a very much refinement of character, a refinement of one's being. And then this, you see, what this does, it lays a foundation for the spiritual understanding, because a heart which has that kind of refinement of being patient, suffused with goodwill, being responsible, having truthfulness, being determined, and so on and so forth, creates a foundation where the sense experience no longer deludes, or we don't get so easily distracted by it. And because we don't get deluded by it, we don't create any bad karma. And bad karma always manifests as a lot of thought, regret, remorse, resentment, and then if we're not skillful, we don't want to look at that, so you know, we eat more food or watch more TV or do things just to kind of compensate. And that is kind of going back into the sense realm, going back into that which is still conditioned. So this sense of developing character within the complexities of life is not just to be a good person. That's not the goal, as I often say, it's the method. Like, the goal isn't to be a patient person. The method of non-grasping, partially, is patience. The method is not to be, the goal is not to be a loving person all the time. The method of loving kindness is that one doesn't attach to aversion, doesn't get alienated by the critical mind. So that I think that's a good thing to consider. It's the method. So if you said it was the goal, then you'd feel I'm a bad person for feeling anger. No. Just that anger is not the method. So don't follow anger. Be patient with anger. That's not the method. Patience the method. But you don't dismiss anger. You bear witness to it. And as you bear witness to it, the force of anger falls away. And because the force of anger falls away, then what happens? Then the attachment to negative critical things in the world falls away, and you have more freedom, more space. And then that spaciousness makes you available. And in that availability, you realize the unconditioned. But as long as my mind is just compelled by the critical faculty, compelled into situations of anger, then I'm always attached to the conditioned world. So it's not just a matter of being a nice person, self-development, being a nice person. It's just, if you understand the kind of pragmatic nature of the methodology the Buddha offers, it makes a lot of sense. So then you don't hate yourself for being angry. You say, no, this is a chance to develop patience. Or you don't hate yourself for wanting yet another electronic gadget, or another piece of beautiful clothing. You don't hate yourself for that, but you see, well, if my mind is always engaged with consumerism, consuming this or that, wanting this or that, then it's still engaged with the conditioned realm. So then renunciation. I give up the greed for baubles and bling and things like that, not because it's bad to have bling, it's just that bling is not nibbana, that's all. So there's a kind of natural renunciation and simplification towards a heart which is content with little, doesn't need a lot, and that lays a foundation for good meditation, but it lays a foundation where you don't need things. You don't need to go out away from your mind for compensation. So I think the rain is winning. So I think as much as I'd like to entertain you for another 2 hours, I think I've been defeated by the rain. So I'll offer that for a short reflection this evening. Sadhu, sadhu.